Okay, we begin here with the two dots on the top of Tetzayin Amud Aleph. In the Mishnah, the Tanakama, the Chachamim, believe that by Behema Gasa, it is restricted, including Agalim, Visayachim, calves, colts, Shleimim, Uchvurim, whether they are intact or whether they have some form of injury. Rabbi Yehuda Matir Vishvura. Rabbi Yehuda allows you to sell a Shvura for obvious reasons, which is that it's not Ra'ui Lemelacha. So Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Matir Bishvura, Mipnei She'ena Yecholah Leitrapot Ulechayot. You can sell a Shvura because it will never be cured and it will not either thrive or live. Amrlo, Velo Marvi Malea Violedet. It's a problem because they're going to end up keeping it around because it has the ability to reproduce. Came into Marvi Malea Violedet Atu Lishuya. They're going to keep it around for a long period of time. And then it's going to cause problems, and Balei Tosafot described before, if there's a Shvura around, people are going to think you sold it as a Shleima, and now it came a Shvura, Eitzel the Nachri, and where people are going to make a mistake and think that you can sell a Shleima or Behema Gasa to the Goy. Samalen, the Kishetelaid, when it gives birth, you'll let me know. Alma, from this you would conclude, Lomi Kabelet Zachar, that the female, once injured, is unwilling to reproduce. Now the Balei Tosafot point out over here, La Mishum Da Savar Trefa Enu Yoledet. This isn't connected to the machloket that we saw before as to whether a trefa has the capacity to give birth, to reproduce or not. That's one din. This is a separate din where the animal has the capacity to reproduce. It just will not reproduce because of the injury that it sustained. It will not be Mikabelet Zachar. So here you have basically what turns out to be a fundamental machloket as to what is the reaction of an animal that is injured, whether it's willing to reproduce or not. The Gemara seems to be speaking about a female animal, whether it is or is not Mikabelet Zachar. And Rabbi Yehuda believes that it is not Mikabelet Zachar. Therefore, there's no chashash of them keeping it around. He buys a Shvura, it's not for Malacha, and it's probably going to be shechted very quickly because there's no use to this animal. It doesn't work, it doesn't reproduce. Now then, the Chachamim say it may not work, but he will keep it around for a long time to reproduce. And given that, we don't want people selling the animal to the goy, and then have others make the mistake or get the mistaken impression that it was sold as a whole animal, and then became a shvura later. As far as a zachar is concerned, it's not clear here from the Gemara whether this makaloku would also persist there. Do we believe that a zachar, also when it's injured, won't mount a female? Or maybe a zachar is different. The Gemara here never makes a distinction between nekeva and zachar. Tutelet Rabbi Yehuda never makes that distinction in the Mishnah, which would imply that he believes it goes in both directions. Meaning both the zachar and nekeva would be fine to sell. Although there are rishonim who want to indicate, based on the reasoning given here, that it's possible that a zachar would have a different din than a nekeva. Ben b'teira matir b'sus. Ben Beteira at the end of the Mishnah says you're allowed to sell a horse to the non-Jews. Tanya Ben Beteira Matir Besus Mipnei Shul Seba Malacha She'ein Chayvin Alea Chatat. The reason you can sell a horse is because the primary usage of a horse is for Rechiva, for riding on it. And riding a horse on Shabbat is an Isur Shvut. It is an Isur Derabanan, not an Isur Doraita, because of Chay Nosei Tatzmo. That in general, a person helps to carry their own weight. And therefore, the full burden is not carried by the horse. And that means that it's only an Isur D'Rabbanan, not an Isur D'Oraita. So the whole chashash here, the whole gzeira here is, we don't want you selling it, out to the possibility that you might lend it to them, you might rent it to them, you might test it right before Shabbat. All of those are applicable when you're speaking about an Isur D'Oraita. So then you have a chashash D'Oraita, we're not going to let you sell. But in the case here, where even if you were to do any of these items, you'd only end up with an Isur D'Rabbanan, there we're not going to be gozer that you shouldn't sell it. Rabbi oser mipnei bet varim. The Rabbi is oser because of two things. Echad mishum torat klei zayin. One is because horses are used either in battle or as a weapon. Echad mishum torat behema gasa. In addition to that, it's also within the category of behema gasa. Mer says bishlama torat klei zayin. When it comes to it being a weapon or used in the military, the horse can kill, Rashi says here, bischufei, means makat yad behema, being hit by the quote-unquote hands of the animal, but it's being crushed or stomped on by the hooves of the animal. Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, says that bischufei perish, biyadav, vishinav. So he looks at it in a more generic sense, not like Rashi who says that he crushes with the hooves, but also that he bites with his teeth. The horses were trained not only to be ridden on, but they were trained as military horses. That means that the horses were fighting alongside their riders. If the primary purpose of the horses was in battle, then they also trained them to bite, to kick, and to do other things during the battle to help whoever was riding the horse. Similar to the way that dogs can be trained to act in different ways depending on their purpose. So to here, when it came to horses, they were primarily used for military uses. Therefore, they were trained to act like military horses. So we understand Rabbi's concern with regards to selling the horse because of its military usage. Ela Torat Behema Gasa Mahi. What does it mean that it has the status of a Behema Gasa? I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Problem is that as the horse gets older and it's no longer has utility in a military function, it's too slow, it's not strong enough anymore to carry the riders to fight in a battle. So when it goes into retirement, they hook it up to the mill and it moves the mill or helps the mill to grind by going around and around, similar to what they did with Shimshon. When he was captured, they tied him to the mill and they made him go around and around. So they used donkeys, horses, or even people to run the mills. So now if the horse is running a mill, that's an Isur de Oraita. The problem now is that if you sell it to them, we're afraid you also lend it to them, rent it to them to use for the mill. And that would be a problem of Isur de Oraita on Shabbat. And that's why it has a Torat Beima Gasa. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha Keben Bitera. The Yochanan says the halacha is like ben b'teirah, which is that you can sell a horse to the akum. Tosafot quoted that yesterday in his justification for the practice that they used to sell horses to the non-Jews, because he paskin like ben b'teirah. Problem was that they were selling more than horses to the non-Jews, and that's why he had to go through other possible heterim as to why we were not abiding by the rules of the Mishnah. Yibailu, shor shel patam, or shor shel petem mahu. If you read it this way, Rashi reads it, shor shel patam, means a shor of the patam. The patam is the one who fattens up the oxen. His occupation is feeding oxen till they get to be a large size, and then they are sold for their meat for shechita. Rashi says over here that it is avudat bizayonaita. This was a lowly profession. This was not something that most people engaged in. But some people, for small margins, used to feed the shvarim, provide them the food, fatten them up, and then sell them off. So the Gemara's question is, shor shel patam, mahu? What's the din of a shor shel patam? The other possibility is that it's a shor shel petem. We're not speaking about the individual who fattens up the shor, rather the shor that has been fattened up. What is its status? Now, the truth is, it will make a difference, we'll see in the end, how you read this. Tibayi le Rabbi Yehuda, tibayi le Rabbonon. You can ask the question in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda and in the sheet of the Rabbanan. Tibai the Rabbi Yehuda, arkan lo kosh shori Rabbi Yehuda, elo bishvura. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah only allows you to sell a shvura, the lo ati lichlau milacha. Because a shvura will never have the capacity or never be ra'oi from lacha. Avahai, tchimishayilei, ati lichlau milacha. Over here, this one, if he leaves it around, he will be able to use it for work. We'll see that at the end. Why that is a sore, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda would not allow it. That's why it's a question. Do we say that the shor shel petem or shor shel patam is mutar to sell because we assume you're going to shecht it? Or do we say that maybe he'll keep it around and then it'll thin out and he'll be able to use it for work? Odilma afilu l'rabbonon lo ka'as rehotam. Or maybe the rabbonon in this case won't say that it's a sore. Ela d'stame lav l'shechito koi. And that's because in general, they don't allow it because it's not for shechita. Because generally, animals are used for their work, their labor. And the only reason, the reason they are oser in the Mishnah is because the primary utility of these animals is to work, which is exactly the problem that we have. This animal, when you fatten it up, it's not ra'oi from melacha right now. It was fattened up for the purpose of meat and to be shechted. So maybe the Rabbanon would be matir in this case. Again, in the case of Shvura, the Rabbanon, the way the Bali Tosafot explained it is, out of the possibility that people will think that it was sold as a Shlema and it became a Shvura, we don't want you selling the Shvura. But over here, where the animal's primary purpose an obvious purpose was that it was sold for its meat and not for its labor, maybe they would permit it over here. So now, the question that you have to ask, and the Baalei Tosafot actually dealt this in yesterday's daf, is why does the Gemara have a question about this at all? Didn't we deal with this yesterday in the Shita of Rav Huna? Rav Huna said yesterday that when you sell a stam animal, it's for Shechita. So if a stam animal is for Shechita, then why over here are we asking about a shor shel patam or shor shel petem? For Rashi Shita, at least in the view of the Rashbam, this all fits perfectly. The Rashbam said in Rashi Shita yesterday that we only make that assumption by a para. A para, which is primarily used for its meat, not for its labor. Over there we say that you can have a tliya of Shechita. On the other hand, a shor, which its primary purpose is for labor, there you do not have the tliya of Shechita. And now that's the Gemara's question over here. Stam shvarim are for their labor, and you can't sell them. Shor shel petem, or shor shel patam, maybe over there the din should be different. So according to Rashi, Shitor, the explanation according to the Rashbam, it makes a lot of sense why the Gemara is asking the question, because shvarim are not used for their meat, they are used for their labor, and here there's a shehor that is an exception to that rule. That's the Rashbam's explanation. The Rabbeinu Tam disagreed with that. Rabbeinu Tam, yesterday, in Rashi's position, said, it makes no difference whether it's a para or a shor, that we assume that there is a tliyah of shechita, and that anytime it's a kosher animal, the assumption is that you could possibly have that tliyah, and both of them are used for work, and both of them are used for shechita, and you have the tliyah of shechita. The major problem with Rabbeinu Tam Shita is our Gemara over here. Gemara over here is asking about a shor shel patam or shor shel petem. What's the question? That is exactly what Rav Huna addressed yesterday. And the implications, the questions are that this is the question, but Stam Shvarim, we know for sure, are problematic. And therefore, it was a problem for the Rabbeinu Tam. So yesterday, the Baalei Tosafot brought two answers for the Rabbeinu Tam. One was the view of the Ri, and one was the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. Ba'omer Ri, the Olam, Shar Shvarim Mutarim, Aval HaTamud Musupak, Kula Yesh Lechamir, Bishor Patam, Bishum dechimishayle avin malacha chadring. We're about to see in a minute that if you keep around a shore that has been fattened up, and then you let it skinny down again, that shore will be so strong that it does double work. It's more efficient than a regular shore, so there is an incentive to keep it around. So therefore, the question of the Gemara is, yes, a regular shore, if you sell it, you can be tolev b'shechita, because he could shecht it, or he could keep it around, we don't know. But when it comes to a shor shel patam, there's an incentive for him to keep it around and skinny it out, because then he'll get more work out of the shor. And that's why the Gemara has a question by shor shel patam. That's the Ri's view. The Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, says that the question of the Gemara here is different than you thought. So again, we sit here, shor shel patam. But over here, the Rabbeinu Tam reads it more like shor shel petam, which is, it's a shor that you plan on fattening up. It has yet to be fattened up. And the question is, can you sell it to him to fatten it up? Because he could now change his mind. He could fatten it up, and that's what he's supposed to do with it, but there's a possibility that he won't fatten it up, and he'll keep it around. So do we worry about the fact that when he buys it for the purpose of fattening up, that has duration to it? And then that duration, maybe he'll change his mind and want to use it for work. That's how the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri explain that Shita, the Rabbeinu Tam, to have it be consistent with the question of the Gemara over here. So Tashma, Dam Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shebeit Rabbi, Hayu Makrivim Shor Shel Petem, or Petam B'Yom Edam. That they used to give over a fattened up cow to the non-Jews on their holiday. Clearly, you can't do this if they're going to be Makriv, this animal, on the Mizbeach. And so the Rishonim explained over here that he was gifting it to them. It was a taxation that was placed on the Jewish community. It might have been other communities as well. But on their holiday, you had to pay this tax to the government, to the king. And that tax was this shor shel petem that they handed over to the government officials. Now, in terms of the permissibility of this, the Ramban says there's no issue whatsoever because it's a tax. It has nothing to do with Yom Edom. It happens to coincide with Yom Edom. But they're not going to be any more thankful on the Yom Edom because you paid your taxes. They would have made sure you paid your taxes either way. And there's no takrovit of Avodah Zarah. They're not going to use this in the process of Avodah Zarah. It was simply a collection process for the taxes. And tax day happened to be the holiday itself. So that's why they were giving it over. Chaser Dalet Rivivan, he bribed them 40,000 dinarim, Shein makrivim oto ayom ela lemachar. He convinced them that they wouldn't have to give the gift today, but they would give it tomorrow, the next day. Chaser dalid rivivan, Shein makrivim oto chay ela shachut. He paid them or bribed them another 40,000 zuz in order that they could give the gift when the animal was already shechted and not alive. Chaser dalid rivivan, Shein makrivim oto kol ikar. And then he bribed them another 40,000 dinarim so that they wouldn't have to give the gift at all. My time, what's the reasoning? La mishum dumahate leshuye. Isn't he worried about the fact that they might keep it around? That's why Rabbi is not happy with this situation, because he's selling them or giving them an animal, which is a behema gasa. If they keep it around, then it's in violation of what we saw before, which is that you're not allowed to sell them a behema gasa that they're going to keep around. Here it's a shorshel patam, and so it would answer our question. Shorshel patam, you can't sell to them because they may keep it around. It says, vidli tameich, according to your reasoning, shein makrivim oto ayom, ela machar, my time. If the whole reason is that he wants to get rid of the problem of violating this takanat chachamim, of selling them or giving them a shor, a behema gasa, then why did he bribe them not to give it today, but to give it tomorrow? There's no difference between today and tomorrow with regards to that takana. Now you could argue that there's a difference because one was Yom Eidam and the next day wasn't Yom Eidam. But it's clear here that if it was Yom Eidam, he wouldn't have been able to give it on the first day at all. So that means that the postponing to the next day, maybe because of chashad, would look better, but halachically there's no benefit in postponing it to the next day. There are those that wouldn't even want to suggest that the next day was part of the holiday as well. So he's postponing it one day. What does that do for you by postponing it that additional day? But again, it was payment of a tax. Why does it make a difference? You paid it today, you paid it tomorrow. Ela Rabbi mi akar milta boi, v'savar yi akar v'ate purta purta. Rabbi wanted to eliminate the problem completely, and therefore he went about it doing it piecemeal, because he knew that tafasta meruba lo tafasta, so tafasta meot tafasta, or the Gemara in Gittin with Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, when Vespasian gives him the option for his wishes as to what he wants, and the Gemara asks, why didn't he ask for the Beit HaMikdash? He says that Hatzala Purta, he thought he could get. He thought he could get some small salvation. A Hatzala Meruba, he didn't think he could get. So that's the idea here. Purta Purta means that he slowly eliminated the problem. Now the way the Rabbeinu Chananu reads it over here is, B'shana Achat, each year he did this. From our Gemara, it sounds like it all happened in one year, and he paid them 120,000 that year and finished the whole practice off. Although from the Rabbeinu Chananu, it makes it sound like the first year he did this, the next year he did this. Slowly he was trying to wipe out the practice. He was trying to stop this necessity to have to give a shorshel patam or to pay this tax on this holiday or pay this tax at all. He basically bribed them so that they would eliminate the tax. If he went in straight and bribed them for that, they wouldn't have done it. So what he did was piecemeal. He changed what they were demanding. The first time they demanded it be on the holiday, says, we'll bring it tomorrow. The next year they said, you know what, we're not going to bring it live, we're going to bring it shachut. Clearly it's not a problem of the takana anymore because it is shachut. And then afterwards they eliminated it completely. So the Gemara at first thought the reasoning was because he didn't want to sell them a shorshel patam, and then that would give us an answer to our question that it is classified like a behema gasa, you can't sell it. Then the Gemara says that Rabbi was in a process. You can't come to any conclusions because the first step that he took has no benefit with regards to this takana, and therefore it wasn't about this takana, it was about eliminating the whole practice whatsoever. Gemara says, V'chi mishayle bari v'abid melacha, if he keeps it around, does it get healthier and do work? The assumption underlying the Gemara's question is that a shorshel patam could be kept around. If it couldn't be kept around, there's no question, because then you'd know it was sold for shechita, and you know they would check it quickly, because otherwise they'd lose out on the animal. Gemara says the underlying assumption here is here, if you have a question, means that you think it can be healthy afterwards, and do malacha. While it's banded up, it's pretty useless. It can barely walk. It can't do very much. It's basically ready to be shechted. So now the Gemara's assumption is that you can keep it and skinny it out. Tosfot over here says, why don't we just worry about the fact that when you sell them a petem, this fattened up cow, that Dilma Mishayilah, maybe he would keep it around. Either, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, will fatten it up, or to skinny it down and then let it do work, because that's the svara behind the Chachamim's position by a shvura. The reason you can't sell a shvura is because the person might think it was sold as a shalem, And then it became a shvura over there. So why don't you say the same thing over here? That you might keep it around the same way that we said by the zachar and the nekeva before, that when it's injured, you keep it around for reproduction, and that's the problem. Aval, the Tosafot says, b'zman muat de pitum leilan de migzar. The small amount of time that it takes to fatten up the animal or to skinny it back down, we wouldn't have put a gzer in place. Ilab time in the chazi l'malacha. But we're not for the fact that it was ra'ui l'malacha. It says there's not enough time or duration in the fattening process to be considered that it's being mishaheh. So the only reason that we would say that it's problematic is if the shihiyah also involves the facilitation of it doing malacha, which is the ikar gzera. And for that reason, the Gemara now is searching for what malacha it does, because otherwise there would be no reason to be gozer in this instance. Amar Ravashi, Amar li Zvida. So Ravashi says, Zvida told me, Zvida is a patam, he is a ox fattener. Bar Torah Mishainle, these oxen, you can keep them around. Bavid al-Khatrin, and they are doubly efficient, or their power is double what a normal shore is after they skinny down. And this goes back to what we said before, that this is the fear, that you do keep it around, and then you get a super ox because of the fattening process, and super ox is an incentive for you to keep it around, and that's the nature of the Gemara's question. Does he shecht it because that's why you buy a fattened up cow, or is he keeping it around and skinning it down because then he gets super ox? That's the safek according to Rashi, according to Rabbeinu Tam. That's the whole question. When you give it over to fatten it, will he really fatten it in the end? Or will he keep it around to use it for malacha? Or according to the Ri, the question is the shore, because of this strength, afterwards, if you skinny it down, maybe you won't eat it, you'll skinny it down, rather than a regular shore where you just shecht it. Gemara seems to be inconclusive here, although some of the poskim see this as being an answer to the chumrah, which is that there is an incentive to keep it around, and therefore there is no tuliyah of shechita by shor shel patam. Right now, the Mishnah says, "Emochrim lehem dovim varayot." You cannot sell to them bears and lions. We call davar sheish bo nezek derabim, and anything that would be injurious to the public at large, you can't sell to them for obvious reasons. We wouldn't want you selling this to them because they would either be used to injure the public or, in particular, the Jews. Ein bonim imahem. You're not allowed to build with them basiliki, gardom, itstaria, ubima. So now, basilica, obviously the etymology of the word is basilica, and basilica, we're going to see later on in the Gemara, has different meanings, but in general, it's a type of architecture that involves a rectangular building that is held up by pillars, and generally has a center area that is raised, and that center area is raised in order to allow the light in and to give you a central part of the building, and then at the ends of the building, which the basilica in general was used in church architecture, there would be apses at each end of the building. So now, obviously, just inherently, the architecture or a basilica should not be asur. And so Rashi explains over here, the sham danim bnei adam, mampilin oto v'meit, that in these basilicas, they adjudicate justice, and they also carry out the justice, which is that they push people off the basilica in order to kill them or to execute them in these cases. So you have two problems here. One is that you are helping to facilitate them being done dinei nefashot. Now, inherently, I don't know if there's a problem with dinei nefashot because you have the dina, the machuta dina. That turns out to be machloket in Rishonim, whether dinei machuta dina is only applicable by monetary matters, or is it also applicable by dinei nefashot. In general, most Rishonim believe that it's not applicable by dinei nefashot, but there are some who believe if they are doing an affair just manner following the mitzvah of Bnei Noach, then there would be a justification for dinei nefashot and dinei machut dina. So then what you have to say over here is that they do it in an unjust way. It is a vigilante justice that's carried out, kangaroo court. They're not justly doing things, and that's the problem here. You're going to facilitate their ability to act in this manner, to adjudicate in this manner, and also put people to death. And that's why you can't join them. Gardom in the Gemara generally means a gallows or a scaffold, which means it's a place of execution. Rashi again here says, Binyan acharu ladon nefashot. Rabbeinu Chanan on the Amud Bet says, Perish gardon v'lashon yavan beit ha-mishpat. Then in Greek, gardom means a place of justice or a court. Generally, in the Gemara, the Gardom is not where they adjudicate, it's where they carry out the executions. Rashi says again here that it's also a place of adjudication. It's stadia. The etymology of the word is clearly stadium. And the word stadium comes from the distance of a stadium, which was what they used for the races, whether it was chariot races, animal races. But the bigger problem of the stadia is that they put on shows there with shorai stadion, which are bullfights, gladiator fights. And they also throw people to be eaten by the animals there as part of the entertainment. So these stadiums carry out activities which are clearly problematic and many times detrimental to the Jews because they generally are the victims of those individuals being thrown in for the entertainment. Ubima, and you also can't build with them a bima. Rashi over here says, Ke'en Migdal Katsarhu. It is like a narrow, tall tower, and it's very high from a bima shel eitz that they used to make in the Migdash in order to have a women's section for the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. So he says that it's called an alambra, and they used to make it in order to execute people. They used to push them off the top in order to kill them. He says, V'chol ela yesh nezek l'rabim. Then Rashi now summarizes the problem here. All of these are injurious to the public. V'dei lo yitzpos. Yisrael sham asur livnot imam. And so they don't take a Jew there and execute him in this way. You can't be a partner to their building of these items. So since they are going to be used in the end for the executions and the unjust execution of Jews, you're not allowed to participate in it. You could see the problem being, even if it wasn't particular to Jews, you could see the problem that if it was a system that was full of kangaroo courts, then it would also be a problem because you're facilitating their ability to carry out whatever measures they want in an unjust way. On the other hand, there are other things you're allowed to do with them, which is of a boni mehem, bimosiot. So Rashi over here reads the word bimosiot as being the plural of bima in a sense. And Rashi writes over here incredibly that it is a bimus, is a bimashal eben achat. It is a platform of a single stone. Umakriv zvachim. And they bring their korbanot to the avodah zarah on this bimashal eben. And he says that the translation is an altar in the old French. And he says there's no problem with it. Davi tashmish, de tashmish. Rashi incredibly says that there's no problem with it, because it's not a tashmish of avodah zarah, it's a derivative of a tashmish of avodah zarah. Because the bima shel eben is only facilitates the ability to bring the tekrobet avodah zarah on it to the avodah zarah. So it's not directly associated with the avodah zarah, it is second derivative. The primary thing is the korban. It is only a facilitator of the korban, which the korban is then to the avodah zarah, and that's why it's two stages away. It's an incredible Rashi to say something like that. And as you can imagine, many disagree with Rashi on this point. And you can see here on the side that the Girsa of the Oroch was not bimosiot, but rather demosiot. And that's what the Balei Tosafot point out. Tosafot is not here, it's on the second Amud. The Balei Tosafot say, Bekasha. The law mishtamit that carry the bimus mishamesh le mishamesh. We never find the Gemara calling a bimus or an altar a derivative of a shimush avodah zarah. Ela mishamesh levadat kochavim. It's a directly in the service of the avodah zarah. Atzma kari bimus. Now later on, the Gemara is going to speak about a bimus, and over there it's going to say it's problematic. Rashi obviously has to deal with that. Rashi over there says the bimus they're speaking about is the platform upon which the avodah zarah is placed. So there's a bimus, which is a single stone which acts as an altar, and there's also a bimus, which is a single stone upon which the avodah zarah sits. So Rashi says the bimus for the avodah zarah is problematic, both because it's a mishamesh avodah zarah, as well as the fact that they worship the base sometimes when the avodah zarah is not there, or along with the avodah zarah. But the bimus that we're speaking about in the Mishnah is an altar, and that is fine. So that's how Rashi gets out of the problem, but the Balei Tosafot are clearly bothered by it, and therefore they favor heavily B'nir Lerik Girsat Aruch, Shperosh Dimosiot V'dale, V'hulashon Merchatzaot. And Dimosiot is another word for bathhouses. K'damina Mishabbat V'perka Chavit. The end of Shabbat, it speaks about these problematic areas. B'karkiyatiot Shel Dimosiot, the ground floors, or the floors of the bathhouses. The problem there is mipineshim amelet umarpea, that these are areas, whether they were mayanot, they were springs, or whether they were bathhouses, that called them amelet, that caused them to be exercised or to sweat, and have medicinal value to them, those are very intoxicating, and that's what caused the Aseret HaShvatim to lose their way and go into Galut. The truth is that Amelet over here is a word that's also used in the context of wrestling, and that might be what they were speaking about there also, which was the Roman practice, might have been the sports and the bathhouses is what took them away and ended up causing them to be put into exile. And then Uperish Rashbam Kadab Dimosiot, Uperish Ubinyan, Shalola Tzorah Chavudat Kochavim. And then you have another possibility, which is the Rashbam, who says that he has the Girs of the Aruch, which is Dimosiot, but he just simply says it's a structure that is put up, not for Avodah Zarah. So you're allowed to help them build it. So whether it's a bathhouse, whether it's a structure that is not for Avodah Zarah, or it's a Mayan, all of those were permitted because they don't have Avodah Zarah purposes. Ubeit Marchatzot, that's why, obviously, making it Dimosiot and calling it a Beit Merchatz is hard when the next word in the Mishnah is Beit Merchatzot. So you have to say that there's something different about the Dimosiot. That's, again, the possibility that they were like sports arenas where they were wrestling, or they were Mayanot that were used for their medicinal purposes, or like the Rashbam says, they're simply a generic building that's not the Avodah Zarah. Higia l'kipa shemamidim ba'avodat kochavim. Asur libnot. When you reach the arch, apsis, under which they put the Avodah Zarah, there you may not join in. If you go to the bathhouses that they have found and excavated, the archaeological digs, you'll see that either at one end of the bathhouse, there is a large arch, and there's an apse in which you can place an Avodah Zarah or statue was placed, or around the entire bathhouse, there were statues put up in these carved out insertions on the walls, that they put statues all around the Beit HaMerchatz. It was done in a way that the Avodah Zarah was overlooking the experience of the bathhouse. So here you're allowed to build the bathhouse with them. The only part you can't build is that area, the kippah, the area where they stand the Avodah Zarah. Rashi over here suggests, Derech Ovdei Kochavim Lamid Dmut Aphrodita BeBeit HaMerchatz Lehem. They used to put Aphrodites in their bathhouses, who is the goddess of love. On the other hand, if you go to places like Caesarea, by the water pools over there, they have the goddess Hygiena by the pools, which is the etymology of the word hygiene today, which was the goddess of cleanliness and good health. So it could be one of those two, whether it was Hygiena or Aphrodite, they used to put these statues in the bathhouse. The reason you can't do that is you can't be a facilitator of the Avodah Zarah. Gemara in other places speaks about the fact that it may not be restricted to go into such a bathhouse. The Gemara says, well, aren't you going into the bathhouse of Aphrodites or of Hygiena? He said, no, that she's in my bathhouse, and now that I'm in her bathhouse. And that there wasn't necessarily a worship of Avodah Zarah associated with it, just a question if you're sharing the bathhouse, and who does it belong to? I'm going there to take a bath, I have nothing to do with the Avodah Zarah, and it's not necessarily a reference to the Avodah Zarah, it was just a decorative way that they dealt with it. But obviously, if you worship the Avodah Zarah, it would be much more problematic. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanan bar Rav Chisda, v'amrila Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava, Amar Rav. So this is a member in the name of Rav. Chaya gasa harihi kibehem adaka limpirkus, avalo lemichira. A wild animal, which is the non-domesticated large animals, they have the same status as a behem adaka for pirkus. Pirkus is when you have a very sick animal, and you shecht the animal, you want to know that you shechted the animal while it was still alive, and it didn't die before you completed the shechita. The evidence of that is what's called pirkus. It's the animal's movement after death that shows you that it died from the shechita, and then it didn't die a natural death before the shechita was completed. That test is different for a behemah gasa than it is for a behemah daka. By behemah daka, since it's a lighter form animal, we expect more movement in the animal after it is shechted. By behemah daka, we would expect the animal to make two motions with its leg. That means both to extend its leg and to contract its leg or retract the leg. That means the test to know when a sick animal, after you've shechted it, was really alive through the whole shechita process and didn't die before, it would have to extend and retract the leg. On the other hand, for a behemah gasa, both because it's a heavier animal and the movement of the leg is a more significant exertion, there you only need one of the two directions in motion. Either it needs to extend its leg or retract its leg. Either one would be sufficient to deem the animal to be alive. And what we're saying here is that a chaya gasa, harihi kebehemah daka. When speaking about a large wild animal, they have the same status as a behemoth dakah, which is that it needs to both extend and retract, or retract and extend the leg, in order to be deemed alive when it was sick or ailing going into the shechita. That's the same rules as a behemoth dakah. On the other hand, Rav says when it comes to mechira, which is the previous Mishnah, it does not have a status of behemoth dakah, but rather behemoth gasa. And so a chaya gasa is similar to a behemoth gasa, and that you're not allowed to sell it to an akum. Vani Omer, Rav Chanan bar Rav Chisda, or Rav Chanan bar Rava, disagrees with that and says, even b'mechira, they have the classification of a behemoth dakah, which means, makom shenagulim kor mokrin. If the minhag is to sell behemoth dakah, you'd also be able to sell the chaya gasa. Shalolim korim mokrin. And if the minhag is not to sell the behemoth dakah, then you also would not be permitted to sell the chaya gasa. But in that way, he says that they are completely compared to a behemoth dakah. It's not our Mishnah. You're not allowed to sell them bears and lions, and nothing that is injurious to the public at large. The reason the Mishnah had to sell it is because it's a danger to the public at large. Had it not been for that factor, shuri, it would have been mutar, which implies that chayot gasot, the Mishnah does permit you to sell. It's only because these chayot gasot, in this particular case, are nezek derabim. But if you remove the problem nezek derabim, you would have been able to sell a chaya gasa to a akum. And that would be supportive of Rav Chanan bar Rava's position and a question on Rav's position. So Amar Rabba Barula Bari Shabur. Case here in the Mishnah is a case where the Ari is injured. And that's why you can't make the deal that you made, because we're speaking about a lion that was injured. And it's following the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda in the previous Mishnah, who says you're allowed to sell a Shabur. The Rabbanan say you're not allowed to sell a Shavur. So here the Mishnah will follow that position of Rabbi Yehuda, but then you can't be Medayik anything. The Mishnah is an Ari Shavur, which restricts you selling the Ari Shavur because it can cause injury to others, or it's a danger to others. The only deal you can make is if it was a Shavur and not a lion, that you'd be able to sell it. That's Shita Rabbi Yehuda and the other Mishnah, that any Shavur you can sell, and the Rabbanan maintain their position that you can't sell it. But in that way, you don't make a deal out of the Mishnah. That would imply that chayot gasot in general you're allowed to sell, because the animals that we're speaking about in this Mishnah are injured animals, not animals that are shlemim. And there you could explain it according to Rav now. Arisha bor is permitted according to Rabbi Yehuda, but that means an arisha lame, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, be restricted. It also would mean that a chayot gasa is the same status as the behema gasa in support of a Rav. Rashi amar stam arisha bor etzel melacha. Rashi says you don't have to say that it's literally an injured animal. You could simply say that it was a lion who is deemed to be injured because it performs no labor or work. It sleeps 20 hours a day, and it doesn't really have any function. So there it has the same status as a shabur. Rashi claims that this is still within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, and that Rabbi Yehuda believes that a shabur is okay, also believes in an ari that is deemed to be shabur is okay to be sold. Whereas the Rabbanan would say that you can't sell it because shabur can't be sold. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot disagree and say that this is even according to the Shita of Rabbanan. Veri Amar Dafilu Rabbanan Amiatia Dad Kan Loas Rabbanan L'Mishum Da'ati L'Meimer Shleima Machrodo. That is because the Tosafot all along says the reason the Rabbanan say you can't sell a Shavur is because we're afraid that he'll see it there, think you sold it when it was still healthy, and it became injured with that individual. On the other hand, here, if you sell the Alayin whole, it's called or deemed a Shavur. So nobody's going to think you sold it as a shalim, because there is never a period of time where the lion is shalim. And therefore, by definition, it is a shavur. And even the Rabbanan would agree here, there's no chashash of people making a mistake that you sold it as a shalim. And it would be permitted, according to even the chachamim, to sell it in this case. And that's because it's deemed shavur. If it was not for the fact that it was nezek derabim, we would allow you to sell it because it's deemed to be a shavur. But once again, that would not prove anything about a chayat gasa being equated with the behemoth dakah. It would imply that a chayat gasa has the same status as a behemoth gasa, and therefore you would not be able to sell them to the non-Jews, and that would be supportive of Rav's view. Meitevei, k'shem she'en mochim lehen behemoth gasa, kach en mochim lehen chayat gasa. We have an explicit braita. Tosefta tells us that just like you can't sell them a large animal, you can't sell them a chaya gasa. But even if a makom shemokrim lehem beimadaka, chaya gasa in mokrim lehem. Even in a place where the minhag of the practice is to sell them a behemah takah, there a chaya gasa is still restricted. Tiyufta, the Rav Chana bar Rava, tiyufta. That is a significant dismissal or refutation of that position of Rav Chana bar Rava, who suggested that he believed that a chaya gasa is the same status as a behemah takah. Here the Tosefta explicitly says that it has the same status of a behemah gasa and not the status of a behemah takah. That would be, again, supportive of Rav's view. Ravina Rami Matnitana Braita Umishani. Ravina, on the other hand, set up this whole situation as a steerer between our Mishnah and the Tosefta that we just brought. It's not Ein Mochrim Len Dubim Varayot V'lo Kol Davar Sheyesh Bo Nezek Daramim Taima Dibe Nezek Halei Be Nezek Mochrim. It's only because they are injurious. If it wasn't that they were injurious, we would have been able to sell them. Our Mishnah seems to indicate that an Ari is off limits, but any other chaya gasa would be fine to sell. Virimini, the Braita, the Tosef, the Kshem Jei Mokrim Behem Agasa, Kach Hem Orim Chaya Gasa, Vavil Makom Shem Mokrim Behem Agdaka, Chaya Gasa, Ein Mokrim, and the Braita seems to indicate that Chaya Gosot have the same status as the Behem Agasa. O Mishani, and how he reconciled between the Mishnah and the Braita is, Be'ari Shavur, Valibah Derev Yehuda. The way to reconcile that is to say our Mishnah is speaking about an Ari that is injured, and it's according to Rabbi Yehuda, or Ravashi Amar Stamari Shavuru Eitzel Melacha, or to say that an Ari in general is deemed to be a Shavur. If it were not a Nezek Derabim, you would have been able to sell it because it can't do Melacha. It's only because it's a Nezek Derabim that it's problematic. Without Nezek Derabim, it would have been fine because it doesn't do work. But Chayot Gasot that do work, or you would keep around, they would be problematic, just like Beim Agasa. And that's what the Bright or the Tosefta was speaking about. Matkibla Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman now challenges. Man lemalan dari chaya gasai. How do you know that a lion is deemed to be a large wild animal? Tilma chaya dakai. Maybe it goes into the classification of a small wild animal. Rav Nachman over here gives an alternative answer, which is, how do you know that a ari is classified as a chaya gasa to make the deal that you wanted? To say that, oh, an ari is not permitted, but other chayot gasot are permitted, maybe it's classified as a chayat daka. And the deal you would make is, a lion is restricted as a chayat daka, other chayot dakot would be permissible, and that wouldn't be problematic, because chayat daka, it's possible that even Rav would say it's fine and has the same status as a behema daka, because a chayat daka doesn't have any work purpose to it. And therefore, deal would be that it's permitted to sell, which would not be a problem. Bali Tosafot will point out that here we have three answers, which is, we have the answer of Ari Shavur, Rav Ashi, and Rav Nachman. The Gemara before only brought two answers, which was the Ari Shavur and Rav Ashi, and he says that this applies to that as well, and the answer of Rav Nachman was just as good for that case. He says there were some Gemaras that had the Girsa of Rav Nachman up there as well, and that would make a lot of sense. Ravashi dayek mimatnitin, umotiv tiyukta. Ravashi was mindayek out of the Mishnah, and then asked the question. It's not, our Mishnah says, Ein mochrim lehem dubim barayot, lo kol davar sheyesh bo nezek derabim. Taima dipe nezek. It's only because it's injurious to the public that it's problematic. Hadlei pe nezek mochrim. If it were not injurious, you would be able to sell it. The taima ari, and the reason that it speaks about a lion in particular is, the stam ari shavuru it's a malacha. That is because a lion in general has no work purposes. And that's why the Mishnah mentions the Ari in particular, that Nezek the Rabim is the problem, and not the Malacha is the problem, because it doesn't have a din of Malacha. Of Amide Achrinai David Malacha, lo. Other things that do Malacha would not be the case. Tiyufta, the Rav Chanan Barova, Tiyufta. Again, that would be a significant refutation of the position of Rav Chanan Barova, because now even without the Braita, Ravashi's Medayik out of our Mishnah, that the din is that a Chaya Gasa has the same status as a Behema Gasa, and that's why the Mishnah particularly picked an Ari, not any other animal. Gemara says, B'Chaya Gasa Miat, Mai Malacha Avdo. The Chaya Gasa, what exactly is the work that it performs? We already determined that a lion doesn't do any work. Where are there Chayot Gasot that are doing work? In general, for work, you need domesticated animals, because you need to be able to control them. Need them to be able to work with you. Wild animals have to be corralled, and then they have to be tamed in order to use them for work. What exactly are you using chayot gasot for? Amar Abaye, Amar Le Mar Yehuda, Debei Mar Yochanai, Tachanei Rechayim Ba'arudi. Abaye says that Mar Yehuda told me that in the house or the estate of Mar Yochani, that they have the mill being run by an arodi, wild donkey, or some sort of wild mule. They're extremely strong. They are not so easy to domesticate or keep in line, but if you tie them down to the mill and you give them a little food and incentive, they'll walk around and around and run the mill. So they are used for working the mill, and so there is malacha that is being done, which would be a problem, because if you sold it to the individual, you might come to rent it or lend it out to them, and they would use it on Shabbat, and this is malacha on Shabbat, and that would be the restriction of chaya gasa in concert with the restriction of behema gasa. I'm Rav Zeira, ki avina bei Rav Yehuda. So Rav Zeira says, when I was in Rav Yehuda's Beit Midrash, Amar lan gemirei minai hal milto, demigaber rabba shmili. He says, while you're in the Beit Midrash, you should get this one thing, because I got it from a big gun. Lo yadana imi Rav imi Shmuel. I didn't know if he was speaking about Rav or Shmuel. Rav Yehuda was both the Talmud of Rav, and then later on was a Talmud of Shmuel. So when Rav Yehuda says, I want you to learn this one thing, and I want you to keep it because I got it from a big gun, we're not sure which big gun that was. Was that Rav or was that Shmuel? So this is Rabbi Zeira commenting on his time learning with Rabbi Yehuda. And this is the din that they learned. Chaya gasa arehi kebeima daka lepirkus. The same thing that we saw in Rav's name before, which is a large wild animal has the same din as a beima daka for pirkus. That means that if you shecht it, it needs to move its leg back and forth to make sure that it was alive at the time of shechita. Ki atai lekorkonia. When I got to the place Korkonia, Ashkachte Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Yoti v'kamar. I found Rav Chiya bar Ashi sitting, Mishmei de Shmuel. In the name of Shmuel, Chaya Gasa, Harehi kebeim adaka lepirkus. Amino, so Rabbi Zeira says, I concluded, Shmamina Mishmei de Shmuel. Itmar. That when Rabbi Yehuda said I was saying the name of Gavarabo, it was the name of Shmuel. Ki atai the Surah. When I came to Surah, Ashkachte Rabba bar Yirmiya, Yoti v'kamar le Mishmei de Rav. I heard him saying it over in the name of Rav. Chaya gasare ike beima dakala pirkus. Amina shmamina itmar mishmei de Rav. Ve itmar mishmei de Shmuel. So then I came to the conclusion that Rabbi Yehuda heard it both from Rav and from Shmuel. I mean that he heard it from both of them. Kisalik lahatam. When I went up to Eretz Yisrael, ashkachte de Ravasi. I found Ravasi over there, which is interesting. Rabbi Zeira, we know, made Aliyah and went to Eretz Yisrael. Over here it's speaking about Rav Asi being in Eretz Yisrael, which is interesting because he is Rav Asi, and not Rabbi Asi, which would indicate that he was a Babylonian, but if he was living in Eretz Yisrael, he should have gotten the title of Rabbi, so it's interesting that he's still called Rav Asi, that he's still holding on to his Babylonian roots. Diyoti v'kamar, he was saying over, Amar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Mishmei de Rav, Chaya Gasari, Kebei Medaka Lepirkus. So this same memra, he was saying over the name of Rav, but he was saying it from Rav Chama Bar Gurya. So Amri Leisa, Rabbi Yezira says to them, below Sabla Mar, demand Mara Dishmaitata, Rabba Bar Yirmiya. Don't you think that the author of this position or the Mesora is Rabba Bar Yirmiya? Remember, Rabbi Zeira, when he went to Surah, saw Rabba Bar Yirmiya saying it over in the name of Rav. Over here, Rav Asi is saying that Rabba Chama Bar Gurya is saying it over in the name of Rav. Amalei, Rav Asi responds to Rabbi Zeira and says, Pat Yochma, you black pot. Minai Uminach. From you and I, together, we'll come to the conclusion. So sometimes, Patu Uchma is used in a negative sense. Over here, Rashi claims it was used in a positive way. And that is, Klomar, Gamata Ragil Tadir B'Torah. That you and I are both steeped in Torah, well versed in Torah, and we spend a lot of our time being engrossed in the learning of Torah. And therefore, Darkan Shel Tamidei Chachamim, since they're spending so much time learning, they don't have time to launder their clothing or to take care of some of their basic needs. And therefore their clothing or their appearance is dirty or dark because they don't have time to take care of those basic needs because they're so engrossed in the Torah. And it might have also been associated with Rabbi Zeira in particular, who, when he was older than Eretz Yisrael, fasted to forget his Torah from Babel and to take in the Torah to Eretz Yisrael, as it's told over in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, and that pehei. So he's going to put your uchma as a positive statement, which is, I see that you're well steeped in Torah. So between the two of us, we can now come up with the Shmaitata, which is that I said it over in the name of Rav Chama, you heard it in the name of Rabba Bar Yirmiya, and therefore, we will now say that it was Rav who said it originally, and then Rav Chama Bar Gurya got it from Rav, and then Rabba Bar Yirmiya got it from Rav Chama Bar Gurya.
And that's why we have this Shoshelet. And so even though Rabbi Bar Yirmiya didn't quote it in the name of Rav Kama Bar Guria, that is because sometimes they just go to the source and they quote Rav as the source. He skipped over the fact that it had come through Rav Kama Bar Guria. So that's the conclusion here, that both Rav and Shmuel said it, as well as the Mesorah of Rav came through two individuals before it reached Rabbi Zera. Itmar Nami, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Bar Yirmiya, Amar Rav Kama Bar Guria, Amar Rav, Chayak Asari, Ikebe Mataka, Le Pirkus. And here's the evidence of that. Now we have a Mesorah that includes Rabbi Zera, who's saying it in the name of Rav Asi, who's saying in the name of Rabbi Bar Yirmiya, who's saying in the name of Rav Kama Bar Guria, who's saying in the name of Rav, this halacha that we found at the beginning of the Gemara. Right now, ain't bonim. You're not allowed to build these items with them. Amar Rabba Barchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gimel Basilika Otein. There are three different types of basilikas. Shel Malcheo De Kochavim. There are the palatial basilikas, which is that they're used for the kings to live in as palaces. Vishel Merchatzaot. There are basilikas that are used as bathhouses. Vishel Otzarot. And they're also used as either storehouses, or the way Rashi writes it over here is Beskulata Melech, Bonim Binyan Chazak, for the security of the king, or as an area where they want to protect documents, or whatever it is, they create a stronger building to store those items, or to protect the treasury, or even the king himself. Amarava Bet Naheter Vechad Yisur. Two of these are permissible basilikai, and you could build with them. One of them is a restricted basilica. The siman, and the one to remember that is asur is the asur malchehem bezikin, to incarcerate their kings in chains. And so that means that the one that is associated with the king is problematic because that one is associated with avodah zarah, or the Rashi says over here, danim bo dinei nefashot. Again, there the king carries out justice in his basilica, and it's used as a place of execution, and that's why you cannot participate. Big day damre, some say, amarava, kulam neheter, that all of them are permissible to be built, all of these basilikai, but it's not anybody man basiliki gardom, it's dario bima. Our Mishnah seems to indicate that there is something that is impermissible. Ema shel gardom, vishel itzdaria, vishel bima. That the word basiliki in the Mishnah is being modified by all the subsequent nouns that are mentioned in the Mishnah, which is that it is a basiliki shel gardum, a basiliki shel itzdaria, a basiliki shel bima. So it is a type of building or architecture, and then the items that are mentioned afterwards are the purpose or the utility of that basilica that you are building. So that's why it's not saying in particular basilica zasur, it's not that these types of basilikai are problematic. Tarabanan, kishenitpas Rabbi Eliezer leminut. It's not clear, but from the remainder of the story, it seems that we're speaking about Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkunus, because later on, Rabbi Kiva was a Talmid of Rabbi Eliezer, brings him Nechama, and we have many stories in Shas where Rabbi Kiva responds to Rabbi Eliezer being despondent, upset about something, and Rabbi Kiva many times is successful at being able to help him out, or to give him consolation. So here, he was Nitpas the Minut. It's not clear what that means, whether that means that he was caught up as a Christian, and he was going to be executed like a Christian. Given when Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus lives, it was in the early period of the Christianity in the Roman Empire, where the Romans persecuted heavily the Christians and did not recognize it as a religion. And it seems like here he's being accused of being a part of that sect that the Romans were persecuting at that time. Or that means that the people themselves had turned him over to the authorities, or whether the authorities themselves had captured him for minut, they're not practicing avodah zarah. It's not clear here what charges he was being brought up on. And you can see that in Rashi. Rashi says that the minim tafsu la kofo l'avodat kochavim, that they had taken him in order to pressure him to worship avodah zarah. The other hand, if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, Perush amru alav shemodeh b'shtei rishayot uvedvarim keyotze behen, that he believes in two gods or other things like that. So the accusation was an accusation that he himself was a min, or he himself had taken up some other religious practice other than Judaism. Whereas in the notes, he wants to change it to show yodeh b'shtei rishayot. They were trying to compel him to admit to two gods. Hello, the gardom. They took him up to the Gardom Lidon in order to be adjudicated. That's why Rashi said in the Mishnah, Gardom is a place of adjudication, even though, as I mentioned, Gardom is usually a place of execution. It was summary judgment and execution. It was done very quickly at the Gardom. Amar lo oto egmon, the ruler or governor that was adjudicating the case, zakein shekamotcha yasok bedvarim b'teilim, malalu, an elderly man like yourself, you would get involved in such worthless pursuits. So depending on what you think the charges were, would affect what you think he's saying over here. If the charges are that he's practicing Torah and that he's not abiding by the laws of Avodah Zarah, then Dvarim B'Teilim is he's speaking about the Torah. That it, those are Dvarim B'Teilim. If he was being brought up on charges of being a min, of being someone who was involved in Christianity, then it would be Dvarim B'Teilim Alalu. A guy like you, a Talmud Chochem like you, what are you doing being involved in these issues? Again, if he was turned over by the people, then it'd be harder to know what exactly the charges were. But he says, what are you getting involved in this stuff? Amalo, Neman alai hadayan. But Belezer says, I trust in God. But he said it in a way which is, I trust in the judge. But what the judge he meant was the ultimate judge. Kasuva oto egmon, alav hu omer. The egmon misunderstood and thought that Rabbi Lazar was saying that I believe in the judge and that I trust you to do the right thing here. Obviously, Rabbi Lazar ben Urkanus wasn't speaking about this judge. He was speaking about the ultimate judge. He was speaking about God. The other hand, if you look in Rashi, the Neman Alai means Din Imcha. The Din is with you, that these are Dvarim B'Teilim. But Rabbi Lazar's intent was that I Mekabel Alai the Din from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I must have done something wrong, that have been brought up on these charges. Amar Lo, Hoel Vehemantani Alecha. I'm so moved by the fact that you trusted my ability to adjudicate this case. Demos paturata. So demos, according to Rashi, means the Avodah Zarah. In the name of my Avodah Zarah, I release you. According to the Baal Tosfot, demos means rachamim. Under the rules of mercy, I'm going to pardon you from this and let you go free. And the Rabbeinu Hanano translates demos as being shvuah, that I take an oath or I swear that I'm going to release you because of what you did. When he got back home, his students came in to console him that this had happened to him. He was unwilling to be consoled. Rabbi, please give me permission to say one thing. From something that you taught us. Amalo Amor says, go ahead. Amalo Rabbi Shema Minut Baliadcha Vanacha Valabdit Pasta. Maybe some minut came to you. You enjoyed it. You got pleasure from it. And that's why you were taken in to be tried. What Rabbi Eliezer was bothered by was the fact that he was taken in or accused of being a min. Because we have a general principle that a person is only brought up on suspicion or charges if there's something that is similar to that or a shemitz of that item in the person. And that's what Rabbi Eliezer was plagued by. And Rabbi Akiva here helps him to filter out and figure out what it was that caused him to be caught in this situation. Amar lo Akiva, hiskartani. You reminded me, Rabbi Akiva. Pam achat hayiti malech bashuk elyon shel tzipori. One point I was walking in the upper marketplace of Tzipori. Again, Tzipori has been excavated archaeologically. A lot of the city's intact. You can go see it. It was a very large Roman city. It was also a city that survived the Churban because it did not join in the Merida Gadol, as well as it did not join in the Bar Kokhba revolts. And so it happens to be a city that remains intact and flourishing city. And one person found me there, Yaakov Ish Kovar Sachanya Shemo, and this was Yaakov from the village of Sachnaya. Amalik Ketuv B'Torahchem, it is written in your Torah, Lo Tavi Et Nanzona, that you're not allowed to bring the exchange or remuneration of a harlot as a sacrifice in the Mikdash. Ma'u lasod mimena beita kisei l'goyen gadol. Can you make it into a bathroom, outhouse, for the Goyen Gadol? Remember that the Goyen Gadol in the 7 days before Yom Kippur is sequestered in the Beit HaMikdash. So he has to have all provisions made for him, including a bathroom. So that bathroom, can you make it out of an etnan zodah? V'lo amarti lo klum. And I didn't respond to him at all. Amar li kach limdeni. Says, this is what they taught me. The Pasuk in Micha says, b'chob tisileha yukatu. All of the hewn images will be smashed. V'chol etnan neha yisarfu ba'esh. And all of the remuneration that is brought to the harlot will be burnt. Behold, that's a beha asim mishimama, and I will wrought destruction on all of their idols. Kimet nanzona kibatza, v'adet nanzona yeshuvu. That from the Etnan of Zavah they have collected, and so they will return to the Etnan Zonah. Basically, they accumulated their wealth through this unbecoming manner, and they themselves will become unbecoming or an abomination. Mimakom ha-tinofet ba'o, they came from a place of filth. The makom tinofet yelechu, and therefore they should go to a place of filth. The Etnan Zonah is the remuneration for a quote-unquote filthy act, for something that is an abomination. And so to use it for a filthy item or for an abomination makes sense based on the pasuk from Micha. Ve'inani hadavar. I got a chuckle out of it. I thought it was a pretty cute way to learn the pasuk. It passed the minut. And because of that, I was taken out or accused of being a min. And I violated that which is written in the Torah. He quotes the pasuk from Mishle, which is in the Ketuvim. You see the broad usage of the word Torah, meaning Tanakh. Harchek me'aleha darkecha. Keep her ways far from you. Zominut. That is, these people are minim. Ve'al tikrav el petach beita. Don't get close to her doorway. Zeha rishut. That is the government. Ikedamre. Some say harchek me'aleha darkecha. She keep her ways far from you. It's referring to the woman or the zona. Zominut veharishut, the minim, the government officials, al tikrav el petach beita, don't go close to the door of her house, zona, that is literally a zona, v'kama, how far away do you have to distance yourself, aravista arvamot, to be a minimum of 4 amot away, you can't be in the sphere of influence of these areas, you should keep your distance from these either individuals, and here, there's the literal individual in the pasuk was the zona, as well as the figurative individuals that are being compared to the zona, which are the minut and the rishut, which are the government officials, and the minim, because they can cause you problems. As Rashi says, shultanot shenotim enehem bebali mamon hargam litol memona. They have their eyes on these rich people, and they kill them to steal their money. Okay, we're going to stop here. 15 lines down on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.